the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider. At the end of a very special week that saw the Church celebrating on Tuesday, January 6th, the Feast of the Epiphany, and the closing of the final Holy Door at St. Peter's Basilica, thus ending the Holy Year. This was only the second time in history that one Pope, Francis, in December 2024, opened a Holy Door, and another Pope, Leo, on January 6th, closed that door. The Holy Year of 1700 was known as the Jubilee of Two Popes. The much-loved Pope of the Enlightenment, Innocent XII, called the Jubilee in 1699, but was too ill on Christmas Eve to open the Holy Door, done instead by his delegate, Cardinal Emanuele Bouillon. Innocent XII, 86 at the time of the Jubilee, completed many works through the year, but died in September 1700. Elected in November 1700, Pope Clement XI, a month and a day later, closed the Holy Door of St. Peter's. After the news, stay tuned for part two of my conversation with Craig and Laura Schlattman, Americans who came to Italy for a year and became volunteers for the Jubilee of Hope. They were also active parishioners of St. Patrick's, the Catholic American community in Rome. This week, they explain the duties of volunteers and tell us some of the highlights, unusual or touching moments of this Jubilee experience, of their time in Italy, Rome, and at St. Patrick's, and what they will bring home from the Jubilee. We taped this, as you will soon understand, before the end of the Holy Year. Enjoy. Now the top stories of the week: Epiphany, closing of the Holy Door, the two-day consistory of Pope Leo and the College of Cardinals, and the Pope's address to the Diplomatic Corps on Friday. Sunday, January 4th. At the Angelus, Pope Leo expressed his concern over recent developments in Venezuela after U.S. forces arrested Nicolas Maduro in Caracas on Saturday and brought him to New York for trial. Leo said, "The good of the beloved Venezuelan people must prevail over every other consideration and lead us to overcome violence and to undertake paths of justice and peace, safeguarding the country's sovereignty, ensuring the rule of law enshrined in the Constitution, respecting the human and civil rights of each person and all, and working to build together a serene future of collaboration, stability, and concord, with special attention to the poorest who suffer because of the difficult economic situation." Leo also expressed once again his closeness to those in mourning following the fire in Kranz, Montana, Switzerland, on January 1st. Sunday afternoon, Leo went to Castel Gandolfo, returning to Rome Monday evening. Tuesday, January 6th, the solemnity of the Epiphany, Pope Leo presided at Mass in St. Peter's Basilica for some 5,800 faithful, and he closed the last Holy Door, marking the official end of the Jubilee of Hope. St. Peter's Holy Door was donated by Swiss Catholics to Pope Pius XII for the 1950 Holy Year. Sculpted by Siena artist Vico Consorti, it replaced the wood panels of the inner door that had been inaugurated on Christmas Eve 1749 by Benedict XIV. It has 16 panels, 15 of which depict scenes from the Old and New Testaments. The final panel shows the Pope closing the Holy Door. At Tuesday's Mass, a long-time tradition was upheld. Known as the Epiphany Proclamation, but more commonly called the Announcement of Easter and Movable Feasts, after the singing of the Gospel and before the celebrant's homily, a deacon, in keeping with this ancient practice, announced from the ambo the movable feasts of the current year. At the heart of the Epiphany, said Pope Leo in his homily, stands a gift that cannot be bought or controlled. The child whom the Magi adore is a priceless and immeasurable good. His revelation does not take place in a prestigious location, but in a humble place. And yet, to Bethlehem, it is said, you are by no means last. It's wonderful to become pilgrims of hope, said Leo. It's wonderful for us to continue to be pilgrims together. At the Angelus, recited from the central balcony of St. Peter's Basilica, Pope Leo reflected on the Magi adoring the Christ child, and he invited us all to be weavers of hope, where, in the place of inequality, there may be fairness, and where the industry of war be replaced by the craft of peace. Wednesday, January 7th, at the General Audience in the Paul VI Hall, Leo XIV announced he will start a new series of catecheses dedicated to Vatican Council II and a rereading of its documents. It is the magisterium of the Second Vatican Council that still constitutes the guiding star of the Church's journey today. He called this a valuable opportunity to rediscover the beauty and importance of this ecclesial event. And he pointed to Pope St. John Paul's words at the end of the Jubilee 2000 when he said, "I feel more than ever in duty bound to point to the Council as the great grace bestowed on the Church in the 20th century." Wednesday afternoon, Leo XIV joined the cardinals, whom he had called for a two-day meeting in Rome, and delivered a speech in which he emphasized, "I am here to listen." He also told the cardinals he's counting on them. He said their day and a half together will point the way for our path ahead. "We must not arrive at a text," he said, "but continue a conversation that will help me in serving the mission of the entire Church." Leo XIV mentioned the four topics he had suggested for the consistory: mission, synodality, liturgy, and Vatican reform, but added the time constraints meant they could only discuss two at the January meeting. The cardinals chose synodality and mission. Thursday, January 8th, Pope Leo presided at Mass to open the second day of the consistory, attended the morning session, had lunch with the cardinals, and also attended the afternoon session. Leo announced that henceforth he would hold such annual meetings with members of the College of Cardinals. Friday, January 9th. In his first annual address to the diplomatic corps accredited to the Holy See, Pope Leo denounced the shift from dialogue to force in international relations, the erosion of international law, and a zeal for war. But he also urged a return to multilateralism and prioritizing peace, human dignity, and family values. Leo stressed that a diplomacy of peace requires dialogue, consensus, and upholding justice, not dominion through force, especially concerning conflicts and humanitarian issues. Well, just a quick look at the big headlines of the past week in Rome, but now, stay here for the Q&A, and then part two of my conversation with two Americans who were Jubilee volunteers during a year they spent in Rome. Welcome to the Q&A, and it's been a while since we've had one. This week I want to talk about the placement of candles and cross on the altar. You may not be aware of it when you attend Mass. Perhaps you just take things for granted. But there are specific rules governing an altar, especially regarding the placement of the cross and candles. Guidelines are found in a very important book called the General Instruction of the Roman Missal, or GIRM, G-I-R-M, for short. Basically, GIRM says there must be a visible cross with Christ crucified placed centrally and ideally remaining near the altar, even outside of Mass. The cross, by the way, can be the processional cross placed at the side of the altar. If the celebrant is facing the faithful, the figure of the crucified Christ on the cross must be facing the celebrant, unless it is a two-sided cross. As to candles, 2 to 6 lighted candles placed symmetrically on either side of the cross, on or near the altar, creating a harmonious, focused centerpiece for the faithful. The minimum is at least 2 lighted candles for any Mass. For Mass on Sundays and Holy Days, 4 or 6 candles for a more festive look. For a bishop's Mass, 7 candles are used, with the 7th often being an oil lamp placed in front of the crucifix. Now, the candles and cross should be placed on or near the altar, arranged harmoniously so they don't obstruct the view of the liturgy. For a papal or pontifical mass, candles are typically placed symmetrically on either side of the central cross. Portions and scale matter. Candles and candlesticks should suit the size of the altar and sanctuary. This traditional setup, revitalized by Pope Benedict XVI, remains common for major celebrations in the modern Roman Rite and is known as the Benedictine arrangement.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1980. Mother Angelica, who is hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, orders a satellite dish and transmission equipment. A wealthy benefactor gives her the $250,000 letter of credit she needs to apply for an FCC license to broadcast.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with a gospel message. EWTN is the most trusted source of authentically Catholic content on the air today, featuring Mother Angelica, Dr. Marcus Peter, and Father Wade Menezes. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
There's all kinds of prayers. There's all kinds of ways of praying. There's all kind of methods of praying. There's a Salesian method, and Francis de Sales and Ignatius of Loyola. There's Franciscan methods and Dominican methods, and you name it, we got it. But sometimes we depend on a method too much. St. Teresa said that prayer was conversation with God. Do you have a hard time conversing with people? No, I don't have a hard time. Well, that's how it is with God.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Well, welcome back to Vatican Insider and part two of my conversation with Craig and Laura Schlattman, Americans who came to Italy for a year as volunteers for the Jubilee of Hope and who are also active parishioners of St. Patrick's, the Catholic American community in Rome. This weekend, just days after the Jubilee Year of Hope ended with the closing of the Holy Door at St. Peter's Basilica on the Feast of the Epiphany, Craig and Laura tell us about some of the highlights, unusual moments, touching moments of the Jubilee experience, of their time in Italy, Rome, and St. Patrick's, and what they will bring home from this Jubilee. How do you get your assignment for every day?
Well, there's two shifts, a morning shift and an afternoon shift, and of course everybody gathers at the beginning of the shift. And the leadership then says, okay, you three go over here, and you bunch go over there, and then the rest of you follow me, and we'll drop you off. So I'm sure you've seen, there's volunteers from the beginning there at Conciliazione.
Oh, yeah.
All the way down the way, up to the security, and then up to the Holy Doors. So that's
And at the other basilicas?
The other basilicas, there's people at the Holy Doors, and usually it's not this group of volunteers. It is volunteers, the Order of Malta.
Oh, okay.
Have had people at many of the other papal basilicas, and of course they serve the Vatican for, you know, medical purposes, etc.
Oh, yeah, they got their big medical center. They're small, but very effective center.
Right.
So basically, I don't think I realize this. The Jubilee encompasses, you know, the whole city of Rome, obviously the papal basilicas, St. Mary Major, St. John Lateran, and St. Paul's outside the walls. But basically your job, the volunteer job we're talking about, is for the Vatican area.
It's for the St. Peter's Basilica, absolutely.
Primarily.
Oh.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Inside and outside. Because we are also inside the Basilica.
I don't think I knew that. I guess when I go, I either didn't see people or wasn't looking. What kind of minimal information are you expected to be able to give?
I mean directions, because of course there's many other people here besides pilgrims, and people ask directions all the time.
Oh, sure.
People come up with their phone and they have a ticket for the Vatican Museum and they want to know where to go. Well, obviously, it's not there. It's a kilometer away.
Yeah, exactly.
So to be able to tell people where things are. I'm sure you've seen when a group of pilgrims comes by, they have these swinging gates, so they close gated areas. And so that's obviously a responsibility as well. And when you arrive at the holy doors, the group of pilgrims will have one volunteer assigned, and that volunteer's job is to keep that group together and help segregate, kind of part the waters as you go into St. Peter's, because there's so many other people in there.
Of course.
And you want to get, you know, you are facilitating their path up to the altar of St. Peter, where they will end their Jubilee experience there.
Well, it's fun to watch them come down Via della Conciliazione in that particular gated, if you will, pathway that's reserved for them. And the leader of the group, whoever that is, carries the cross, and then the group, small and large, walk behind them and often pray together or sing together. It's very difficult that they're not doing, you know, one of those two things. Now tell me this, because I've been asked, and how does a single person go through St. Peter's, for example? That would be the one that would require St. Mary Major. You just go to St. Mary Major and you stand in line. Mm-hmm. But because there's this path for groups, how does a single person go, Greg?
On the app, you have a registration for going through the Holy Doors. And at the end, or I should say the beginning, really, Conciliazione, they're at Piazza Pia.
Right.
There is a trailer there. And you show them your registration, and then they will form you and others into a group. And then when they get a large enough group of people, maybe 20 or 30 together, they will hand them the Pilgrim's Cross, and that group then will go together. So you're not all necessarily in the same language, and that's okay. In fact, we were just doing it this morning with a parishioner from St. Patrick's.
Oh.
And we were with a group of Spanish speakers, and then the three of us English speakers. So they form you up together there.
I haven't gone through the Holy Door this year. That I know, that's absolutely terrible. It's going to be done in the next week. Putting things off, I think it's called procrastination. And I just thought, as a single person, because you know, I haven't joined a group or anything else like that. I didn't think I needed to.
And you really don't need to join your own group.
No. But if you want the prayer card that you're issued when you register, you're given a prayer card in your language, and you join that group. If you have a couple of friends who speak English, or usually there are some people who speak English, they kind of hang off at the back. And then we just start praying together. We follow the prayers, that the scripture that's been provided. Or if you just want to say the rosary yourself, or pray and be silent, or follow the group and watch the singing, because it's an uninterrupted path. It's a pilgrim path to St. Peter's.
Exactly.
And that, as volunteers, that is our number one job, to facilitate those pilgrims walking a prayerful way to the altar of St. Peter's.
Right.
Because you're
because they're walking down a very busy street filled with other other visitors who are might not be pilgrims, and they might just be having a coffee. They might be, you know, still interested in going into the basilica. Mm-hmm. Now, tell me some of the memorable stories you've heard, either wonderful stories or very unusual questions.
It's interesting because when you are a volunteer, of course, you're interacting not just with the pilgrims, but with everybody who's here, tourists. So you have the entire spectrum from where is the Vatican as they stand right in the middle of St. Peter's Square to where is the toilet? Where's the bagno?
Oh, yeah, true.
Lots of desperation in those
The facilities, yeah.
You know, so very practical questions sometimes, too. So you get the entire spectrum. There are many people who are not Catholic. There are many people who are not Christian. I love Laura's term. She calls them Catholic curious.
Lovely.
So here we are, you know, in the Jubilee year in front of St. Peter's, and they really want to know what's going on here. What is this all about? So so you get an entire spectrum. And that's part of, I think, the joy, if you will, of being a volunteer, is to get to engage with everybody who comes up. And they know that you're official because you got that lime green.
Exactly. You're spotted in the dark for sure.
You're not proselytizing. We're not trying to convert. We're giving information, and the Holy Spirit does the rest.
Sure, exactly. But now, has there been
one or more kind of really touching moments, moment you couldn't wait to tell people about? Name one, for example, if you could.
Now I'm going to start to cry, but it is it was within the first day or two that we were volunteering.
Wow.
And at that time, the stairway for the pilgrims went up on the right-hand side, not all the way around to the side of the Sagrado, but it was actually going up the front steps.
Oh, right in the center.
And a woman stopped in the middle and just started to cry.
Wow, because of where she was going?
Yeah, and what she was doing and the meaning of passing through these holy doors, the meaning of her pilgrimage, the grace that's going to flow from that pilgrimage during that holy year.
Well, she was showing people that she wasn't taking this for granted.
No.
She knew where she was. Mm-hmm. And what she was about to do.
Yeah.
How astonishing.
And I'd say every single day we volunteered, we see moments like that.
Exactly.
Last week or 2 weeks ago when we volunteered, Laura was at the beginning of the path, and I was up near the holy doors. There was a group of Italian school children, maybe 7 or 8 years old, and they began by singing the Jubilee hymn.
Oh.
So they were down there at Laura's end, a half mile away. And when they came up to the holy doors, they were still singing the Jubilee hymn, these little 7 and 8 year olds. Yeah, and it just, oh my gosh. Yeah. So,
they won't forget it. The teachers won't forget it.
Absolutely.
You all, anybody that heard them.
Absolutely.
You know.
So just moments, you know, just all the time.
Yeah. Now, I just want to switch gears just a little bit from your time, your work, et cetera, for and at the Jubilee. You've also had a chance, living here this long, because you haven't volunteered for 52 weeks.
Nope.
No.
You wouldn't be sitting in my office. You'd probably be in a rest home. But anyway, you've had a chance to do some traveling in Italy and out of, or what?
Well, you know, as I said, we lived in Europe for a while. And our job really is to be here this year. We've traveled a little bit, but only for a day or two at a time, because we're really here to host people that come and stay with us and to volunteer here at the Vatican when we're not. And that's been a blessing in itself. There'll be time for that later on after the Jubilee year. This is a special year.
Well, and you volunteered as lectors at St. Patrick's.
Yes.
I know that. So speaking as a lector. All right. We are close to the end of our time, but I'd love to know from each of you what you're bringing home with this year, this experience. Laura?
Grace. The grace that has been flowing. You know, that little bit of grace you received at baptism, that little trickle of water, and over your life, that grace increases along with the sacraments. And being here in Rome, the grace is just overflowing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I hope to bring that grace and the feeling of hope back to our family and friends and our parish back in the States.
There had to have been just, I'm listening to you, we heard, exhilarating moments, personal but faith-filled moments, to have your faith almost increased by meeting so many other people who have, you know, it can be money, it can be health reasons. There's people who will come with crutches because they still want to go through a holy door and be here for a Jubilee. So to have our faith kind of reinforced by seeing people who have made a huge effort to live out their faith, to be in Rome, be with a Holy Father for a holy year, you know.
Yeah,
and for you, Craig.
Well, I think for me, Laura hit the nail on the head when she said hope. And it's the Jubilee of Hope. Mm-hmm. When we first got here, of course, we had our beloved Pope Francis.
Oh, true.
And we volunteered the first weekend in February, which was his last public Mass, because after that, he was in the hospital, and then he was absent.
Valentine's Day, he was admitted.
Right, exactly. So, you know, his absence was felt. He wasn't at the papal audiences, obviously.
No.
He wasn't at the masses, et cetera, et cetera. And then we lost him the day after Easter, and his last official statement was the homily of Easter. And suddenly, now we have a new pope, and we have a new energy. And it's almost, to me, a metaphor for the Paschal mystery.
Sure.
You have this death, and you have now a resurrection, and
passion,
a new energy.
Death and a resurrection.
Into the Jubilee. And so that kind of sweep of Pope Francis beginning and our current pope now continuing what's happening, it's just a beautiful thing.
Well, yeah, when you think about it, to be here for the death of a pope, conclave and election of another is no small thing.
Right.
So it has been an amazing year, and at this point, knowing we're just weeks away from the closing of Holy Doors, from the ending of the whole year, it's like, what? You know, just a year ago, we were looking at the preparations. This won't be ready, and that won't be ready, and a lot of things weren't ready when the Holy Door was opened. But they got ready. The city of Rome worked as hard as it could for all the stuff they promised for the Jubilee, because there are works underway that have nothing to do with the Jubilee, like the subway line and Piazza Venezia, which most of us living here today might not ever see completed. But a five-year-old might be around for the opening of that subway. But anyway, I want to thank Laura and Craig Schlatten, because they've been good friends, not only to volunteers, I can't even imagine how wonderful that was, but in our parish, to become part of another family. And we welcomed you. You have welcomed us. So I want to thank you and wish you Godspeed on your future travels and your time in the U.S. and a Merry Christmas. I know you have family coming. And a blessed, happy, healthy New Year to you both. So
thank
great.
You. Thank you. Yeah, we've been so welcomed by people here, and St. Patrick's has been a wonderful community to be a part of. So we are very blessed to have that opportunity.
We got to have a faith home, right? The faith family.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Laura, thank you, and God bless.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Joan.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.